Welcome to the Boneyard with Steve Robertson. As always, I am your good friend and host, Steve Robertson. You're the first people I've spoken to today, so it may take a moment for me to kind of work out the rasp of the nighttime hours, but nevertheless, here we are. We're back in Stark, Vegas. Came back yesterday, of course, following the game. We're going to break down the game. We're going to look at kind of how the tournament's going, and we're going to look at a cool top 10 list, and then we're going to talk about what to expect. A programming note, you will get a bonus show from me this weekend. Once we know the regional hosting locations on Sunday, we're going to record a show. Then, once a bracket is revealed on Monday, we're going to record a show. Then on Wednesday, we'll begin to kind of break down what to expect. And then on Friday, we'll do a full preview. So a bonus show. Yeah. So happy to be with you today. Happy to be back in Stark, Vegas. And I'll tell you right out of the gate, the tournament pretty much went for us as I expected it to go. And I think many of you probably felt the same way. Doesn't mean that I like it, but it's what I expected. Again, we went into this tournament not expecting to be able to gain much nor lose much. We did pretty much what was expected of us, and now here we are just kind of waiting. Now, the waiting's the hardest part, as Tom Petty told us. It's true. But nevertheless, still right there in the thick of the hosting conversations, and as Brian O'Connor said yesterday, yes, we expect to host. You never know what a committee is going to do, but the metrics certainly support our inclusion. And I know that there are some Mississippi State fans that are rooting against us to host. They are. And it's a weird dichotomy to me. And again, it goes back to this, you know, I think these comments are disingenuous. I'm just going to say it for what it is. I think it's disingenuous. I think it goes back to this coping mechanism that is so prevalent among the self-loathing segment of our fan base, that if we host, they're happy. If we don't, they're also kind of happy, because then they can say, I told you so, right? It's if we have to win in order to make me feel good, then so be it. But if we have to lose to make you feel correct, then, you know, shame on you. Right? That's just how I see it, you know. But again, there are a lot of people out there rage baiting you on Twitter. There are a lot of people out there on social media with hot takes that aren't rooted in anything factual. It's just people that need some attention, and God bless them. Let's thank our friends at Bulldog Burger Company, longtime sponsors of this show. I plan to have some more Bulldog Burger Company this weekend. Had some earlier this week and was excited about it. I always am, right? It's like, when the bride says, hey, I'm thinking Bulldog Burger for dinner, yeah, let's do that. Yeah, that's always going to be a thumbs up for me. Like, there's sometimes, you know, they'll say, well, my wife will say, we're not thinking, what if we do this? I said, we always do that. We always do that. Let's try something different. We always do this. I'm kind of tired of this and tired of that. But when she suggests Bulldog Burger Company, I always think that's a thumbs up. It's a win. Because the diversity of the menu means that I can get something different pretty much every visit, right? That's one of the things I love about Bulldog Burger Company. Of course, they've got these new items on the menu that you should try, you know, the chili cheese fries. One of two smash burgers, one with two patties, one with three, if you're so inclined, right? And then the Bischoff cheesecake. Right. And I've yet to partake in that. And so that will be on my order the next time that we either eat there or get it to go. We like to eat at home a lot. Somebody asked me this weekend. I saw one of our folks out there, and they goes, hey, Steve, I live in Starkville. I never see you. Well, unless it's a Mississippi State game, I'm largely reclusive. Right. That's the truth. And it's for no other reason than the fact that when I'm home, I want to be home. But when I am home, I enjoy Bulldog Burger Company, and I enjoy it regularly, and it kind of reminds me that I am home. It's one of the best parts about coming home. Three great locations to serve you: University Drive in Star Vegas, Gloucester Street there in Tupelo, Lake Harbor Drive in the Ridge and Flowood area. Have the spring rolls as your appetizer. They'll make you and everybody around you better looking. And get that chocolate shake to go. You can ride that ride home with a smile. Bulldog Burger Company, the place for people to go to meet. M-E-A-T. T. All right. Let's go to yesterday's game. And that's one of the reasons I wanted to go ahead and get this done today, because I just want Sunday to be about hosting. I want it to be about the locations. And so we're going to put our tournament wrap on, and then we're going to look back at a couple things, and we'll begin to look forward. I love this time of year, and it's not because I require attention, but I do enjoy kind of breaking things down for all of you, whether it be in the written word or on this show or on social media. I do my best. I mean, at the end of the day, it still ultimately boils down to a matter of opinion, like for those last few hosting spots, the last top eights, and of course, the last teams in the tournament. But by and large, it starts ideally with RPI. That's where it starts. And then we kind of work from there. So, Georgia kind of on a run here to kind of make things interesting for the committee, where they, you know, they're going to get a top eight, but Georgia may be in a situation where they play their way into a very solid top 10 RPI, which makes it a little easier to do that. And everybody's going to understand anyway, but, you know, I guess if you're the committee, you'd love for Georgia to be a top 10 RPI. Okay, so let's kind of break down the game here. And I really thought in the beginning, you know, as a former hitting coach, I was pretty pleased early on because we're putting the ball in play, right? We're not swinging and missing. And of course, you know, Volchka didn't get a ton of strikeouts against us the first appearance. He didn't this time either. But it's a big ballpark. You know, line drives tend to work, especially on a day when it's a little bit overcast and there's some moisture in the air. So didn't expect a lot of home runs on Thursday, and we didn't get a lot of home runs. But Bulldogs go 1-2-3 in the first. Fry grounds out the first unassisted, and then Reese flies out to center, and Sully grounds out to third. So it's a 1-2-3 inning, and then Duke Stone goes right back at him. And I thought Duke was really good early here. He gets a ground out to third on the first pitch from Trey Phelps, who's a very dangerous hitter. Gets Daniel Jackson, the SEC Player of the Year, to ground out to short. And then O'Shaughnessy strikes out swinging. So very efficient 1-2-3 inning for Duke as we head to the second. Now, we had a chance here. We had a chance to kind of make some things happen, and we didn't. And ultimately, it cost us. So Jacob Parker grounds out the second, hit the ball hard. Nice play there. Vitas Valenkis is hit by the pitch in a 2-1 count that puts him on base. And then Stallman just kind of hits a little ball out, dribbler out there off the left side of the mound. And I think he was fooled on the pitch. It just kind of worked out, but there was no play to be made. Niners runners at first and second. So less than two outs, we've got a runner in scoring position. Bryce Chance is probably the guy we want up there most. And Bryce gets into a 2-2 count and then hits a 6-4-3 double play ball. And, man, it's like the way things have been going for us, right, we've got to find a way to get these things in play, right? And, I mean, put them in green grass somewhere. So, first double play of the game for Georgia, and it's not – guys, double plays don't happen as a matter of luck, right? The pitcher is trying to get under a barrel and get a hitter to hit the top half of the baseball and beat the ball in the ground to give his defense a chance. And so the guy executed a pitch here, and as a result, little sinking action there, they get the double play. Scoreless in the bottom of – we had the bottom of two – didn't stay that way for long. Lujo pops up to Garrett Frye in short left center. And then Ishikawa, who very, very, very polished hitter there. It's an 0-2 count, and he just kind of singles at the left field there. Wynn singles to left. That sends Ishikawa to second. And then we kind of manufacture a little bit of misery here. Hutchinson's been hit by the pitch on a 2-0 count. All right, that loads the bases. Well, Branch flies out to right field there. And so, again, you kind of go back here. Hudson's the key at bat here because it pushes that runner to third. And then guess what? It's an RBI fly out to make it 1-0. And then Black goes down looking. But, again, you never know how the rest of the Hudson at bat would have gone. But you can't give them free 90s. And we did, and ultimately it cost us. Now, we get right back with it. Ryder Woodson, who has been in many respects kind of unfairly maligned by a certain segment of our fan base, who's been really good as of late. Woodson doubles to right center So now we have a runner in scoring position and nobody out. Got to get him home. We do. Sean James comes up and singles to the right side on the very first pitch. And just like that, basically three pitches into the third inning, State is even the game. And then Fry hits a ball that looks like it's going to be destined for center field. And it's caught by the pitcher. And then he doubles Sean James off first base. I mean, it's like we talk about baseball being a game of inches. Well, here you go. You get tied and you think maybe, you know, as this ball goes through, maybe you got a chance to go first to third. Well, you don't, you know. And then James is just kind of caught in no man's land there. So two outs. Reese gets a lengthy at bat and goes down swinging. Man, he kept fouling balls off him. I thought this thing's going to end with base hit somewhere. But it didn't. But that's good baseball, right? All right, 1-1 game as we head to the bottom of the third. Phelps goes down swinging on three pitches. Jackson singles to the shortstop. O'Shaughnessy, K's looking, and then they get Jackson picked off. So you face the minimum in the order. You give up the single, but eventually pick him off. All right, top of four. Sullivan singles to the left side. Sully had a pretty good game yesterday. Singles to the left side on the first pitch. And, you know, I don't know what we're going to do here, right? I don't know if Jacob Parker's ever had to bunt in his life, and I don't know that I want him bunting. But he flies out to left here, and then Sully is picked off. And it's just it happened to Jackson, it happened to Sully. And then, of course, Valinka centers to center field, right? Stallman flies out to center, and that's the inning. And, again, you end up getting a couple guys on, and you get nothing out of it. Bottom of the fourth. And this is where the game kind of began to unravel for State. It's a single to third base. Just kind of a chopper out there. Ace did the best he could, but the throw wasn't in time. So it's an infield single for Lujo. Well, they get Ishikawa to fly out to right field. I think, okay, maybe we got a chance to get out of this. And then Wynn singles to left. That pushes Lujo. And 1-0 count, Hudson. Just kind of the ball meeting the bat, man, and pushes that ball to right field. And is a three-run home run, makes it 4-1. Branches then walked. We bring in Jack Bauer for Duke Stone. And immediately, Branch steals second. But we get Black to ground out, and then Phelps grounds out to second. Again, Trey Phelps didn't do much yesterday. It's 4-1, and it feels like, you know what, we've missed some opportunities. And Georgia's offense is so explosive. When you keep letting them off the hook, eventually they're going to run into one. They do. Top of five. Chance flies out to center field in first pitch. Woodson then walks. Again, Ryder Woodson. And then Sean James grounds into a double play. And again, that's just good pitching, right? I mean, you're executing pitches, getting guys to hit your pitch. It looks like a fastball. It's got some sinking action to it. They get under a barrel. It's how life works. So another double play. Bottom of five. Jackson flies out to right field. O'Shaughnessy goes down looking. Lujo walks. And then Ishikawa grounds out the second. So, you know, we give up the two-out walk, but work our way around it. Two-out walks are of the devil. Top of the sixth, Fry comes up, doubles to right center. Off the bat, I thought it might have a chance. And then immediately, Reese follows right back up with a single to right field. The run scores. Now it's a 4-2 ball game, and you feel like, hey, we knocked Volchka out of the game. We got a runner on base. Nobody out. Guys, we're one pitch away from tying this thing up. Sully flies out to right. Parker flies out to center. And then Valencius goes down looking. But we're within a couple swings here at 4-2. Bottom of six. Wynn goes down swinging. Hudson grounds out to third. And then Branch fouls out to right field. So nice inning there for Jack Bauer. Top of seven. Stallman walks. And then Bryce Chance grounds into a double play. 5-4-3. The fourth double play of the game. Guys, that is the story of this game. The four double plays. Guys, we out hit them 9-8. It's not like we struck out a bunch. We're getting guys on base. We couldn't get them around. Tip of the cap to them a little bit too, but we got to be a little bit more selective in our pitch count here. And so here's what bothers me about this one, okay? And this is not taking a shot at Bryce. I love Bryce Chance. I love him. I'm so grateful he came our way. But Stallman got walked on five pitches. Why are we swinging at the first pitch? Matt Scott's a guy that came in, and he's a good dude, but he's not, you know, he's not a dominant reliever. But why are we swinging at the first pitch here? Right, we're down two. Tying runs at the plate. And we swing at the first pitch. I don't agree with that. And I don't know if that's part of something Kevin McMillan put together for Bryce, or you know, or if it's just one of those things that you know, Bryce just thought, hey, this is a pitch I can hit. I'm not going to be overcritical of it because, again, we had four double plays. But after that, guess what happens? Remember, we walk Stallman on five pitches. We swing at a first pitch and get two outs recorded, and then he can't throw strikes to Woodson. Eventually, Woodson flies out to center field. But Scott comes in, and it's a five-pitch walk to Stallman. Chance, double play, and then Woodson opens the count 2-0. So Matt Scott was struggling to throw strikes here, right? And I understand being aggressive, but when you've kind of gotten your way back into it and you've got a pitcher that's kind of struggling to find a strike zone, you can't help him. You can't. All right, bottom of seven. And Al and Georgia adds a very, very, very important insurance run here. Black singles up the middle, then Phelps is hit by the pitch, and it's still, even though I saw the replay 1,000 times, I'm not exactly sure what happened here. Yes, he was absolutely hit by the pitch. There was no disputing that. But it looked like the backhand on the bat got hit by the pitch, but he's like, they're tending to his left hand. It's just weird to me. But nevertheless, he gets on base. We do challenge the call. And there was, again, no doubt that he got hit. Maddox Webb comes in, gets Jackson to go down swinging. Daniel Jackson didn't do much against State either. They pinch hit Oriach, and he gets ahead 2-0 in the count. We like to put him on. Lujo grounds back to the pitcher. And we couldn't get two here. We go home, and it'd be nice if we could have got two and got on out of this thing, but we couldn't. But that makes it 4-2, and the inning continues. We bring in Dane Burns, and he walks in a run, and that is just absolutely inexcusable. You bring in the lefty-lefty matchup guy. You got one job, right, and you walk the guy on five pitches. Can't happen. 5-2. Bring in Tyler Pitzer, he gets wind to fly out to right field. This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp, and for some, summer is their favorite season of the year. Travel picks up, kids are out of school, adventure becomes a focus. For others, juggling it all can be tough. It could be overwhelming. Then they start counting down the minutes until the kids are back in school, and you feel like you're wasting all these days of beautiful sunshine. We plan to get out and have some fun as a family too, but we plan to thrive and not just survive. Therapy can help people better understand their needs and feel more confident setting boundaries and create a version of summer that actually feels good. BetterHelp has over 30,000 therapists. It is the world's largest online therapy platform, having served over 6 million people globally, and it works. With an average rating of 4.9 out of 5 for a live session based on over 1.7 million client reviews. BetterHelp therapists work according to a strict code of conduct, and they are fully licensed in the United States. The reality of it is you need to learn how to say no. You don't have to say yes to everything. Take advantage of BetterHelp and take charge of your summer. You don't have to say yes. Find support in therapy. Sign up and get 10% off BetterHelp.com. That's better, H-E-L-P.com. So we go to the eighth. Now down three again. James goes down swinging on three pitches. Fry flies out the center, and then Reese goes down swinging on three pitches. So very inefficient offensive inning for your Bulldogs. Bottom of eight, we nearly got in a bigger kettle of fish right here, but the good thing is we were to work around it a little bit. We get Hudson to strike out swinging, then we walk Branch. Black pops up to the shortstop. Phelps finally gets a hit, singles through the middle, and that chases Branch to third, but we get Jackson to strike out looking. Great job. Great job right there. Our top of ninth. We need three runs. We got three outs to get it. Well, Sullivan says, I got you, fam, right? Solo shot to left center. So we get one of those runs. We still got three outs to work with. And at this point, you have to treat it like a new inning. And I say that sometimes, and I don't know that you guys get it. You have to treat it like a new inning. You got to see the home run as a bonus. Whatever your game plan was, and I guess here, what I would suspect is, hey, we got to work counts. Right? We got to work counts. Got to work counts to get guys on base, right? We get up 2-0, And then Parker grounds out to the shortstop. And then on the very first pitch, Valencius grounds out to the shortstop. And then Stallman singles down the left field line. Now all of a sudden, Tyne runs at the plate. We pinch it, bring in Blake Bevis for chance, and he grounds out to the shortstop. It's crazy, man. It is. And again, I go back to that. We talk about approach a lot. We do. And a lot of times we don't know the approach, but we can judge the results, but not always the intent or the effort. But as I go back and I look at this, again, you have to treat it like a new inning. And so it's a 5-3 ball game with one out and the bases empty. Why are we swinging at the first pitch? I don't get it, right? The pressure's on us, but we have to exert some pressure on them. And when you go out there swinging at first pitches and not make guys work, and all of a sudden, yeah, you get the home run, and all of a sudden people are excited, and then it's ground out to short on a 2-0 count, and I don't blame Parker for, on a 2-0 count, he should get a favorable pitch to hit. But I don't, even though Stallman had to single down the left field line, I just, I don't quite get it. And again, maybe there's some analytics that support it. I think maybe we're just ready to go. Maybe. I don't want to sound motive. But anyway, that's the ball game. Mississippi State loses. And again, we didn't expect to win this tournament, and we wouldn't have gained much from winning this tournament. We were not going to play our way into a top eight. And truth of the matter is, if you're seated somewhere from between 10 to 13, 14, it's 6 one way, half a dozen the other. It's kind of how it works. Joey Volchka gets the win. He is now 9-2. Duke Stone charged with the loss. He is now 6-3. Matt Scott, again, got that sinker working for him, gets his 5th save of the year. And again, we talked so much about offense. Offensively, we played pretty well. We couldn't get the big hit. And I think we kind of got caught early in counts with runners on hitting their pitch. And again, hey, these guys get free school too, right? They're not throwing batting practice out there. They hadn't won the SEC championship by luck. And Wes Johnson, of course, one of the best pitching coaches in the country. So, yes, it's going to look like a fastball, but it's going to have some laid break sink to it. But you got to be able to get in your legs a little bit. You got to understand that. And it's baseball. But you can look up and down the order here. Garrick had to hit, scored a run. Ace had a hit, had an RBI. Noah Sullivan, 2-for-4, obviously hit the solo home run. We didn't get anything out of Jacob Parker. That's fine. He's earned what he's got. Vitas Valenkis goes 1-for-3. Stallman goes 2-for-3. Bryce Chance goes 0-for, and of course, a couple big ground outs and double plays there. Ryder Woodson goes 1-for-2 and has a walk. And then Sean James goes 1-for-3. So up and down the order, we got production for the most part from everybody. Everybody contributed something. Pitching wasn't a problem, though. And four double plays. I mean, think about that. We hit 9 innings, and 4 of them have double plays. It makes it very difficult, right? Duke Stone goes 3 1/3, and like everybody else, he's pretty much on a pitch count, allows 4 earned runs on 6 hits. And the big fly, of course, the 3-run Oppo Taco. 4 Ks and a walk for Stone. Jack Bauer goes 2 2/3 of an inning, 2 strikeouts, a walk. Allowed 1 hit on 1 run. Maddox Webb gets 2/3 of an inning, walks 1, strikes out 1, does not allow a hit or a run. Dane Burns comes in, walks in, an inherited runner. And then Tyler Pitzer goes 1 1/3. Tyler has been good as of late. And I asked Brian O'Connor specifically about that. I mean, it looks like Tyler Pitzer is kind of rising into the circle of trust when it comes to Mississippi State. He pitched well against Texas A&M. And pitch well against Georgia. But at the end of the day, it is another close loss to an elite team, and we have had way too many of those. And again, we talk about quality losses and that kind of stuff. At the end of the day, a loss is a loss, right? Of course, you don't want to have a negative RPI loss, and we don't have those. But if we truly want to go compete for a national championship, and I know that we do, well, we got to win some of these games. We're not winning enough of them. And a lot of people wonder, well, Steve, how far do you think this team can go? Well, I think we could get to Omaha. Am I expecting us to get to Omaha? I need to see the bracket first. But at this point, no, because we have not shown down the stretch that we can win a weekend. Now, can we win a regional? Yes, because as many of you so astutely point out, when State plays teams that are lesser than them, State typically kills those teams, right? So, yeah, unless we get upset in games one or two in a regional, we should be able to sweep through a regional, I would suspect. So I think you win the regional, and then you see what happens with a super. And again, you got to see, you never know what's going to happen, right? I mean, just like when 24, right? We felt like we should have hosted. And the longer we get away from it, you know, again, the sticking point with me is we finished tied with Georgia in the standings, and we beat Georgia head-to-head, 2-1. They got to host, we didn't. And the impetus behind that decision is they said, well, State had 4 quad 4 losses. Okay, cool. I just want the standards applied uniformly. So, but the longer we get away from that, it's like, you know, okay, this team's got a much better resume than that one did. Every year's different. Every committee is a little bit different too. But the reality of it is, yes, Mississippi State should host, and we'll talk more about that a little bit later. For those, again, that always expect negative things, they always say, and somebody sent me some tweet yesterday from one of these walk-on college baseball experts, and said the committee always screws Mississippi State. Always screws Mississippi State. Well, I would argue in 24, Mississippi State screwed Mississippi State by losing to Central Arkansas, by losing 2 games to Austin Peay, right? Those are the games. Should we ever lose those games? Never. Never. That Austin Peay team was good, but we absolutely shouldn't have lost to the Bears of Central Arkansas. It's a disaster, man. It's an unmitigated disaster. Well, those standards apply to other people too, right? But I go back to the 2021 NCAA tournament bracket. We were top 8 when some people in the national college baseball media said we wouldn't be. I said we would. We were. We get Virginia Commonwealth. We get Campbell. And we get Samford. Did we get screwed that week? I would say no, we didn't. And I think that's a fair assessment of all of this. You go back and you look at the 2019 bracket. Do you remember all of that? I don't know that you do, but I'm going to go back here. And again, you know, I've been around a few 24 hours, right? As many of you have as well. And so when you go back and look at the 2019 bracket, well, we opened up with Southern University, who was coached by Kerrick Jackson, by the way, who's now in Missouri. And then we beat Central Michigan. It was fun. And then we beat Miami. Did we get screwed that week, that year too? I don't think we did. You know, 2018, you may recall, Mississippi State was, what, 2-7? First 3 weekends in SEC play. Maybe you remember. We got swept by Southern Miss, fired Andy Cannizzaro, and we ended up, you know, having to go to the Tallahassee Regional. And I don't know if you guys remember this. We went into the final weekend of SEC play, and we had number 1 Florida here, and we were going to have to sweep them just to qualify to make it to Hoover. And you know what? We did. We swept number 1 Florida at home to finish 15-15. And granted, now there are some teams around the country that think they should host at 15-15. You shouldn't. We were happy to get in the SEC tournament. And then we went over there and we lost. And a lot of people thought, oh, there's no way. There's no way that Mississippi State's going to get a chance to be in the NCAA tournament with a 31-25 record. We were 6 games over .500. But yet somehow we made the tournament. Do you remember this? Right? And then we got absolutely shelled by Oklahoma 20-10. And we come back on the Elijah McNamee walk-off home run to eliminate Florida State. And then we beat Samford in a barn burner of a game, 9-8. And then we had to beat Oklahoma twice, and we did. So again, I go back to this whole sentiment of, well, you know, the NCAA tournament committee is always screwing Mississippi State. Guys, we got to stop this. Honest to goodness, that line of thinking just makes us unhealthier. It's just not true. The facts don't support that. The reality doesn't support that. And so you think, well, we're going to get screwed. No, we're not going to get screwed. We're going to get what we deserve. We're not a bubble team. And you remember 2017? Do you remember that regional? Many of you will never forget it. Yeah, Bulldogs got hot down the stretch, you know, and we actually made a run there in the SEC tournament. Of course, it was double elimination back then. But as our, you know, our resume went before the NCAA committee, we were 36-24 for 12 games over 500. So, okay, we'll get in. And where do they send us? Southern Miss. Southern Miss. Rain-soaked Southern Miss. And then we lose to South Alabama in the first game of the tournament. Battle back to beat Illinois-Chicago 5-4. Then we beat South Alabama. And then one of the greatest postseason pitching performances that a Mississippi State Bulldog has ever put together, Jacob Billingsley, who throws a complete game win for just his second win of the year. How incredible was that? Maybe you've forgotten. Billingsley goes 9 innings, allows 1 run on 6 hits, strikes out 5, walks 4, throws 124 pitches to beat Southern Miss 8-1. And then we come back and we beat them later that day 8-6 to win the regional and advance to the Super Regional at LSU. And probably should have won that first game against LSU. We weren't beating that LSU team out of going to Omaha. But again, this whole sentiment that, well, the committee always screws it, it's just not true. It's just absolutely not true. Guys, Mike Alford, the chairman of the committee, AD at Florida State, he's a Bulldog. Scott Strickland, I know many of you have varying opinions about him. I don't. I saw Scott yesterday. I still consider Scott a friend. I understand the negative sentiment that some of you have, but Scott Strickland's not going to screw us, okay? Scott Strickland's a Bulldog alum, okay? He understands what baseball means here. He is representing the entire Southeastern Conference, and he will advocate for all of us. So, no, the committee is not going to screw us. Again, I think some of you guys may be about 20 years old, and all you remember is 2 years ago, in 2024, and you felt like we got screwed. And now that we've learned a little bit more about the process, I think you can look at that and say, you know what, hey, with four quad four losses, I can kind of see why State didn't host. Again, I just want the same standards to be applied this year. That's my thinking. It's time now for today's top 10 list, brought to you by Close with Blair. That's C-L-O-S-E with Blair, B-L-A-I-R.com. Blair Chandler is my friend, your friend, our collective friend in the mortgage industry. Get his 25 years of expertise and know-how working for you. It can be a very convoluted and confusing and stressful process. It can be. As someone who's bought multiple houses, I can tell you, even in the best of times, it's not a lot of fun going through the mortgage loan origination process. It's fun picking out a house. It's fun moving into a house. It's fun getting settled. But the actual loan process can be very difficult and very stressful. Get a mortgage professional. Get Blair Chandler. 601-500-2344. 601-500-2344. Save his number in your phone as mortgage guy. You won't forget the need. You may forget the name. And the reality of it is Blair knows the ins and outs of underwriting. He knows how to construct loans to give you the best chance for approval. We've had several Boneyard listeners that have closed loans with Blair. He is a Bulldog through and through. And we encourage you to frequent his website and to solicit his services in times of need. And he can help your dream of homeownership come true. Whether it's your first home, your next home, or your retirement home, or perhaps that game day condo that may be more affordable than you think, the only name to know is Blair Chandler at closewithblair.com. Okay, this kind of struck me yesterday, actually. We've had a couple of suggestions, but I decided, you know what, I want to do this. This is not a democracy. So I thought there was a couple of songs that were played at the Hoover Met last couple of days. And I got to thinking, you know, there's a lot of those 80s rock singers, not just like hair metal or hard rock singers, that went on to have solo success outside of the kind of the gateway band for us. Like there are some singers we got to know as, oh, that's the singer of this band. And then they went out, maybe did a solo album. More times than not, it didn't work. But in these cases, it did. And I don't know that this is maybe the best top 10, like the order itself. You could make a case that number 9 should be number 2 and number 2 should be number 7. But I just thought, hey, let's celebrate these solo joints by some of these great 80s singers. Now, I promise you, it's mainly radio rock. But number 10, a song that I think a lot of people don't appreciate. It's brought to you by Vince Neil. Vince Neil had Steve Stevens, and more on Steve later in the show. Vince left Motley. He says he was fired. Nikki says he quit. It didn't really matter at the end of the day. It all means the same thing, gone. But Vince had a couple of solo albums, but he kind of hit the airwaves with a great track that Steve Stevens played guitar on. It's called You're Invited, But Your Friends Can't Come. Right? You're Invited, But Your Friend Can't Come. It's just kind of a party song. But it's a great rock and roll song. And it's one that I think not enough people maybe appreciate, even if you're a Motley fan. A lot of people didn't like the Motley self-titled album with John Corabi as a singer. I love it. Some people didn't like Vince stepping outside of Motley and doing his own thing. And I love most of that stuff too. But You're Invited, But Your Friend Can't Come. Number 10. Number 9. Everybody knows the Eagles, and everybody knows they've had multiple vocalists over the years, even within the same band unit. Don Henley had a great run of solo albums. We've done a top 10 list years ago of Don's solo run. But the song from the very beginning, like when he began to kind of branch out a little bit, was Dirty Laundry. And it's really a song about the media, right? You know, if it bleeds, it leads, you know. It's a very tongue-in-cheek song just about how the media at times kind of exploit situations just for viewership. And nowadays, it's for clicks and engagement. And there's a lot of people in sports media that do the same. But Dirty Laundry at number 9. Number 8, former lead singer and percussionist in the rock band Genesis. Of course, Peter Gabriel left and had some success too, but I don't consider Peter Gabriel a rock artist. Phil Collins had some top 40 hits, some ballads. He had some bangers too. Of course, he had that great duet with Philip Bailey because she is an easy lover. But I thought, hey, the best rock song of the Phil Collins catalog, it's got to be In the Air Tonight. And that's your number 8 track, number 8. Number 7. I don't know that Loverboy is really appreciated. I mean, honest to goodness, like when you go think about early 80s radio rock, I mean, you had like Toto, you had Journey, you had Foreigner, and it was also Loverboy, and they were contemporaries, and it didn't last very long, but the reality of it is Loverboy had some bangers. But Mike Reno of Loverboy stepped out of the band and sang a great duet, so you're kind of getting a twosome here, right? You're getting Ann Wilson and Mike Reno. On the Footloose soundtrack, it's Almost Paradise. And this was a great, great ballad. And it's a big part of the movie. And it did exceptionally well on the charts. That Footloose soundtrack. Could you make an argument it's the best movie motion picture soundtrack of all time? Maybe. Maybe you could. We talked about Steve Stevens earlier with our number 10 track. At number 6, Steve Stevens, of course, the primary guitarist with the Billy Idol solo joint. And many of you said, I didn't know Billy was a solo guy. Well, yeah, he left Generation X and was a great front man for a couple different bands, but found his greatest successes as a solo artist. So we're going to go with the great banger Rebel Yell, which in its core is a love song. It didn't feel that way because it is such an up-tempo, in-your-face rock song. But when you look at the lyrical content, it's very much a love song. It is. Number 5, Lou Gramm stepped out from Foreigner and put a great solo album together, Ready or Not. And I don't know if you know that album well. Maybe you just know the hits. But it's worth your time and trouble to maybe go back and re-listen to that album. It was outstanding. It really was. And we're going to go with the debut single off that album. It's Midnight Blue. It sounds enough like Foreigner that you're kind of like, this could have been a Foreigner track, but there is, the instrumentation's a little bit different. There's no Mick Jones, that kind of stuff. So the tone, the guitar tone's a little bit different. But again, there is this air of familiarity with the track, but also, too, enough difference that it kind of steps away from the Foreigner catalog. Number four, many of you probably thought this would be number one. It's not. It's great, though. It's great. Steve Perry of Journey, one of the greatest vocalists of the rock American experience, put together that great album, Street Talk, which is super good, too. And the big hit on that, of course, was written about his significant other at the time, Oh, Sherry. The video was great. The song was great. The album was great. And that's your number four track. Number three. Now, anything that Robert Plant touches typically turns to gold because he is so incredibly skilled as a vocalist, right? He's a guy that could sing the phone book and probably have a number one hit. He had a string of solo albums. A lot of people, Big Log is one of those songs that really stands out to me, but it didn't really fit our motif today as we wanted to do bangers. And I go back to Tall Cool One, and I love it. I love it. And I love the little aside in there, that the little Led Zeppelin piece. And it's great. It's a great track. Number two. He was fired from Van Halen. And because of that, I think rock and roll actually improved. Now, I love the classic Van Halen albums, and many of you are like, Steve, don't sit here and talk about Van Hagar. Guys, some of Eddie's best work was with Sammy. It's true. 5150 was outstanding. OU812 was great. You get deeper and deeper with it, man. Just because you weren't watching it on MTV or you got too old or whatever to sit around and watch videos all day, it doesn't mean that Eddie quit doing great stuff. He did amazing guitar work all the way up until the end. But some of the best stuff was with Sammy. But when David Lee Roth went solo, all of a sudden he hires Steve Vai. And Steve Vai obviously was kind of known from his time at Alcatraz, but all of a sudden he was kind of thrust into the forefront and the spotlight of music. And we're all better because of it. And I don't know that most of us even discovered Joe Satriani if we hadn't discovered Steve Vai. And of course, if David Lee Roth had stayed with Van Halen, I don't know that Steve Vai's career is ever the same, to be quite honest. But we're going to go back to, again, just an incredible guitar song. It's Yankee Rose off the Eat 'Em and Smile album. That the cover of that album is still just so ridiculous. I mean, it's like just seeing it across the room, you're like, dude, what is that? It's great marketing. And, of course, you got David Lee Roth and the Van Halen following and so many fans that have enjoyed his music for years, and then introducing a new guitar hero into our lives. It was excellent. And I love the cover of Tobacco Road, too, by the way. But number one, I don't know how you could argue against this. And yes, it's the Pet Shop. No, it's not the Pet Shop Boys. It's Ozzy Osbourne. Gets fired from Black Sabbath. Meets Sharon Osbourne, of course, kind of reinvents himself and becomes the greatest rock and roll frontman maybe of all time, certainly of my generation. You know, I guess if I'm being fair about it, I would have to go Freddie first. But from the hard rock, hair metal, 80s music that I grew up with, it has to be Ozzy. And of course, we lost an icon when we lost Ozzy. And of course, he continued to make great music late into his life with Patient Number 9, won a Grammy for that. I don't know, that was impossible. And one of the things I don't think you guys understand, we couldn't get heavy metal music played on the radio. And for a long time, they wouldn't play it on MTV. That didn't happen until really Headbangers Ball came along. They just wouldn't play it because they were scared of it, because there were a lot of people in the religious right that were totally against this kind of music, is that Ozzy Osbourne had to be a Satanist and Kiss and all this kind of stuff, you know. And so Ozzy did a lot of this without significant radio airplay, without significant rotation on MTV. And you look back now at a lot of those bands and a lot of those songs and a lot of those videos that MTV pushed, and Ozzy Osbourne kind of remains supreme. That's what authenticity does, right? Either when you're talented and you can find a vehicle to promote your art, people will find it. And nowadays, one of the reasons that I think music is so diluted is because everybody can download Pro Tools to their home PC, get a mic off Amazon, and then they can record. And so it's been kind of watered down. I think the positive of that is that anybody can cut a record now. Anybody can record a single. And then you can go market that single. But there's so many people like that, it's difficult to find, you know, the wheat from the tare, right? It's true. And so I think you forget how hard it was to record a record back then. It was almost impossible. There was not of any significant value. There was no self-promoted records. You had to have a label to push you. You had to get you in Hit Parade or magazine or on the cover of Rolling Stone. They had to get your video on MTV. So I like that these days. And everybody's like, well, I can do it. I'll just put it on YouTube. But the problem is you're just a little cork, you know, in the Atlantic Ocean. I'm not saying don't go for it, but I'm just telling you, I'm really just kind of trying to praise the fact that the rockers of the world back then sought out great stuff. Nowadays, everything just kind of crosses your timeline, you know, and it's like, it's kind of luck, right? The algorithm kind of sends you what you want. And all of a sudden, you watch a video for 30 seconds and you're inundated with them, right? That's just how it works. And so the vehicle for delivery of music these days is completely different. Unless you listen to Sirius XM Octane or something like that, but what happens is people kind of get encapsulated in their own little bubble. An algorithm feeds this, and you're like, hey, what's the song on this TikTok video? Oh, well, let me go find this. And then next thing you know, they add it to your playlist. And so you kind of live in kind of a constricted environment. And again, that just, again, speaks to the joy of Ozzy Osbourne, right? That even when you think about the eras that he existed, right in the beginning when it was so difficult to get a record deal and they were writing music and performing music that people had never done before, and basically with the founder of heavy metal music. And then next thing you know, we get into, you know, to CDs, right? And then all of a sudden we get into the MTV generation, and all of a sudden they're playing your videos. And then all of a sudden MTV basically goes broke because they wanted to be hipster doofuses. Instead of playing the videos that we wanted to see, they wanted to force feed us what they wanted us to see. And now they're broke. Right? Now they're broke. They've ruined MTV. It could have been an incredible thing. It used to be a big deal to get your video on MTV. And then they decided to do 24 hours of ridiculousness and hair care commercials. And they're out of business. And it's no surprise. But again, when you leave your original mandate, this is the thing that happens. And then, of course, Ozzy and the people around him continued to kind of work through that. And the next thing you know, you're streaming Ozzy. Next thing you know, you're buying a pay-per-view concert for Ozzy. You know, it's like, so again, you think about, while the industry moved on and left a lot of people, Ozzy Osbourne and his management team always found a way to evolve with the times to keep Ozzy's music relevant. It's incredible. That's why he is an international and worldwide icon. So Ozzy Osbourne, we're going to go crazy train today, number one, because it's crazy to think about how it goes. But the reality of it is we wanted to celebrate some great music on the show, and so we have. We didn't do a top 10 last show, so wanted to make sure that we delivered today. If you have ideas for the top 10 list, reach out, let us know. Best way to do that is to hit up my friend, Roy Samanti, on X at Dogmatic67, DAWGMATIC67. You can find me on all forms of social media at Scout Steve R, and our great list are housed over at Spotify under that same Dogmatic67 handle. All right, next segment of the show brought to you by Campus Bookmart, a Starkvillian institution. Man, we love Campus Bookmart. We do, and if you don't love them, it's because you don't know them, right? Because to know them is to love them, because they have so many great things that have the Mississippi State marks and insignias on them. You want them. You want them in your wardrobe. You want them in your home. You want them on your vehicle. You want to detail out your fan cave with them. Everything you need to celebrate your fandom as a Mississippi State fan can be found at Campus Bookmart. Stop by and see them the next time you're in town. You got to start thinking about football season soon, right? And of course, we're expected to have some postseason baseball next weekend here in Starkville. So we'd encourage you to go by and pick up your tournament gear from Campus Bookmart. But it's never too early to start thinking about that fresh new t-shirt or polo for football season. It's true. Mom, pick yourself up something too. You deserve it. You put up with a lot from us. You do. You do. So, stop by and see them next time you're in Starkville. Very easy to find. Take the turn there at the Trooper Station off 182 and just mosey on around right before you get to campus. There's Campus Bookmart on the left. If you can't make it to town, or perhaps game day is a difficult shopping day for you, visit them on the World Wide Web, courtesy of Al Gore's internet at campusbookmart.net. And for loyal Boneyard listeners, we have a phrase that pays. It's BSR, which stands for Beautiful Steve Robertson. That gets you free shipping on all orders over $75. Any order less than $75, absolutely incomplete. That's Campus Bookmart. All right. Guys, Florida absolutely tomahawked Alabama last night. And Mercy rolled them in 8 innings. Florida is one of those teams, too, you begin to start thinking about. We're going to talk about some of that in the next segment of the show. They just kind of quietly going about their business. Nobody has talked at all about Florida being a true contender in the NCAA tournament. They have just kind of, you know, existed, right? They had that big sweep earlier this year to Alabama. Alabama just destroyed them. And it's like, okay, we can just kind of give up on Florida. Well, you know, Florida took 2 out of 3 from Georgia. But they've just sat there. Georgia has kind of run away with the league. And then there's the Texas and Texas A&M teams kind of benefited from that rainout. And Florida just kind of laid there in the reeds. And now all of a sudden, here we are. And there's 6 teams left playing in Hoover. They're one of those 6. And they pick up a nice RPI win over Alabama. It was 2 in the 4th, 5 in the 5th. It was 7-0 in the middle innings. Alabama gets on the board with 1 in the 5th. And then Florida's like, don't even think about it, dudes. 4 in the 7th. Alabama forces the game to continue with 2 runs in the bottom half of the 7th, but this thing is over. Florida puts up 2 more. They answer with 2 in the 8th, and they win it 13-3. 16 hits for Florida and just 9 for Alabama. Liam Peterson earns the win. He goes 5 innings, strikes out 8, allows just 1. Ethan Surowiec, 4 for 5 in the ballgame with a home run and 3 RBI. The very talented Alabama shortstop, Justin LeBron, goes 2 for 4. And that's really the ballgame, right? Looking ahead to today, a couple of games of note that could have some impact on the seeding in the NCAA tournament. Arkansas, 17-13 in the league, 37-19 overall, but again, some very significant losses early on. They're going to take on Texas. Now, for those of you that live with pearls clutched, obviously your rooting interest here is Texas. Obviously, when Texas has some guys that aren't going to pitch in the bullpen, so it'll be interesting to see how this game kind of plays out. I think the Mississippi State psyche benefits from a Texas win here. So that's the hope and the expectation. Of course, your SEC Freshman of the Year, Anthony Pack Jr., is hitting 360 with 7 tanks, 45 RBI, and will be a significant part of this. But it'll be interesting to see kind of what Arkansas does. You know, Arkansas, of course, big win earlier this week. Auburn and Texas A&M, the nightcap. We'll get 3 o'clock today, Arkansas and Texas. And then right around 7 p.m., Auburn and Texas A&M. We'll try it again. You know, Auburn won that series against Texas A&M down in College Station. And A&M still working and vying for a top 8 national seed. They're still not quite there. I know some other people projecting that. But based on conversations that I've had and the way that I understand how to read analytics, they're still not quite there. they may get there, and Auburn win, I think, exhausts the possibility of A&M being a top eight. That's what I think today. Of course, an A&M win puts them in the top 10. And, of course, right there you're looking at this whole Georgia thing. I still think that A&M is a team that gets pushed out because of Georgia. That's my thinking. So that'll be interesting. And, of course, then we'll have the semifinals on Saturday and a final on Sunday. Kind of looking around, too, at some other games of note. I think it's important to kind of keep up with everything because when you're playing at things of significance, then you've got all kinds of games out there at your scoreboard watching whether you're playing or not. So looking back at yesterday, the Thursday scores, again, there's a lot of tournaments being played that really are no consequence as they relate to Mississippi State. I do think it's a good win for State, too. Again, you get a little RPI boost there. Troy beating South Alabama. That's nice, right? I mean, it's not a significant thing, and it takes a lot to move people in the RPI this time of year. It's part of the deal. But any time that you can pick up a point or two there, it is somewhat significant. Samford beat Western Carolina yesterday, too, to stay alive in the SoCon. Of course, we'd like for Samford to win the SoCon. It'd be a good thing for us. Not a significant boost, but again, as you're trying to see things improve as best they can, these are the kinds of things that you matter, right? I mean, that's just how it is. All right, looking at the ACC tournament, Georgia Tech rallies back and beats Virginia 16-10, and then Miami beat Boston College 8-2. And these are, again, potential teams other than Georgia Tech that could be in a regional with Mississippi State. Boston College, 17-13 in the league, finished ahead of Miami, but Miami, of course, better RPI. So that's part of the deal. And look at the Big 12 tournament, too. I still feel very confident that there will be a Big 12 host. Oklahoma State beat UCF yesterday, 12-6. Kansas beat Baylor 8-7. And that's one, too, because of the fact that there's been a lot of advocacy on behalf of Kansas. I'd like to see them lose. Kansas State loses to West Virginia. I think West Virginia and Kansas is an either-or proposition as a host. Arizona State beat Cincinnati. Of course, Mississippi State owns a win over Arizona State. So, again, the better that stuff goes for us, again, the more significant that it is for us. So just kind of how it all kind of plays out. And then looking at the Big Ten tournament, which I think is worthy of looking at because there's so many teams with national seed implications playing, it's important to see if the chalk holds. So Big Ten tournament, it's all very important, right? Just because of the fact that there's a lot going on. So USC right now leads in the middle innings against Michigan State. Michigan State went 24-31 overall. So you expect Southern Cal to win that. But again, there's a lot of people that think Southern Cal shouldn't host because of their record against the Quad One. Later today, UCLA will play Purdue. Michigan will play Nebraska. There are some people that are forecasting Nebraska would be in the regional with Mississippi State. Washington plays Oregon. And just kind of looking back at yesterday, Purdue beats Iowa, and then Michigan beats Ohio State. So it's always a rivalry. It is. It always is. But that's, again, that's the Power Four conferences. I think one thing that I think it's worth looking at, too, is the Sun Belt, just because so many people are still wondering what's going to happen with Southern Miss, right? Coastal got beat earlier this week. And let's just kind of go through this here. Yeah, Troy and Southern Miss are in a weather delay today. And we on a win over Troy, and we split with Southern Miss. And I think from an RPI standpoint, you'd like for Southern Miss to lose. It's a double elimination tournament. Coastal will play Louisiana later today. Yesterday, of course, Troy beat South Alabama. Coastal beat Appalachian State. South Alabama beat Georgia State. And then Texas State beat Louisiana. So that's kind of where things sit right now, but I know many of you will kind of keep your eyes on that. Southern Miss, the regular season winners of the Sun Belt. They've won 10 games in a row, too. So, I mean, Southern Miss is doing what they're supposed to do, and they also went out and scheduled very aggressively in the non-conference. And you'd like to see that rewarded, but not at our expense, right? And so, yeah, they should absolutely host, and there are some people, again, kind of advocating for them to be a top eight national seed. I just don't think the math lines up well for them. All right, final segment of the show brought to you by the Stark Vegas Clubhouse, the best place to stay in the Golden Triangle, bar none, especially where you're bringing a large group to town, and you should. Google the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. When you do, their Facebook page will pop up for you. You can peruse all the amenities of all the pictures of all the amenities available to you and your guests, the full-service kitchen, the wet bar, that incredible back porch area, the fire pit area, plenty of parking. Just 5 minutes away from the Mississippi State campus. You can do your tailgating right there, right? It's just so incredibly convenient. While everybody else is fighting traffic, getting out of town on a ballgame weekend, you can already be at your accommodations watching the evening games, right? Now, we've stayed there back in New Year's of 25, had a great time, plan to do it again at some point soon. You owe it to yourself to make some memories with the people you love the most. Now, part of that Google search is also going to reveal some booking options for you. You can go VRBO, you can go Airbnb, whatever you'd like to do. It's up to you. Or you can book through the Evolve website and save some money by using promo code BSR10. BSR10. That's beautiful Steve Robertson and then the number 10, BSR10, gets you 10% off your stay. What a great deal for our Boneyard listeners to have the opportunity to stay at such a unique place at a discounted rate because you listen to this show. Be sure and frequent that website and learn more about your options booking at the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. All right. Let's take a look at the RPI. And as we prepare for the afternoon games on Friday, Mississippi State is 14 in the RPI. We did not move at all against Missouri. And then we basically split spots with Georgia. Georgia has now moved ahead of A&M too. Again, a little points here and there, right? Of course, there were some people that were worried that Ole Miss would surpass Mississippi State in a pecking order. The hay is now in the barn. And it's interesting, Southern is 13, State is 14, Ole Miss is 15. Mississippi State beats Ole Miss in every single metric. So everything that you're worried about, other than strength of schedule, I guess, Ole Miss is 4, State is 7. That's not an appreciable difference. State wins 40 games, Ole Miss 36, and of course, 4 of those wins for Mississippi State came at Ole Miss's expense. So, no, there will be no host opportunity in Ole Miss, and though they did not successfully wrestle that away from Mississippi State, there was really no chance of that happening. But now you can rest assured. But again, it's like an episode of The Walking Dead. You know, since we get done with that, all of a sudden, real or imagined, we got something else to worry about. So, the top five have basically remained stable. UCLA, Georgia Tech, Auburn, Texas, North Carolina. In the event that any of these teams lose in their conference tournaments, they will still be top eight national seeds. I think it is fair to say we know five of the eight right now just based on RPI. Then you can add Georgia in because as the SEC champion, they're going to get there. So six of the eight spots, I believe, have already been claimed. Alabama losing, I think, is one of those things that kind of creates a little bit of flux, okay? Especially the fact that Florida beat Alabama. You know, the rosters themselves, pretty comparable, other than the fact that Alabama, of course, had that weekend win against Florida. But I think with Florida winning in the SEC tournament, though I don't think you can add a lot of weight to that, you start looking at tiebreakers and things of that nature, it's going to be, I believe, either Florida or Alabama for the final top eight. Because I believe Florida State is in. I believe Florida State at 19-11, strength of schedule 5, RPI of 6. You know, we talked earlier in the week about, you know, what happens between Florida and Florida State as they begin to jockey for position. It's interesting. It is. And so, basically, if Florida when's tomorrow, I think that gives the committee that Scott Strickland is a part of the opportunity to put Florida as a top eight and move Alabama to maybe number nine. I think that's possible. We'll see how it plays out. But again, you know, Florida State, there's some people still debating that. And I had some discussions with some of my friends at D1 Baseball earlier this week. And I said, guys, I got Florida State in. They didn't have Florida State in. I said, I think Florida State will be in. Mike Alford, the AD, is on the committee. Scott Strickland from Florida is on the committee. I just feel like that Florida and Florida State, I think Florida State is in, and Florida is now officially on the top eight bubble. I didn't think Alabama would end up being out of this thing, and that's the thing you begin to ask, you know, what's fair, right? What's fair for a team from Alabama that was as high as six in the RPI, and they just lose one game, and now they don't have it? You know, that's, again, an interesting dynamic. But, again, if you're comparing Florida and Alabama head-to-head, right? And, of course, the weekend goes to Alabama. But let's look at the other metrics here. Florida has the better overall record. Alabama has a strength of schedule of two. Well, Florida is three, right? So it's so nip and tuck that I think if you put Florida as number eight, and again, we still got some games pending, and again, let's say Florida, you know, wins on Saturday, I think that gives you enough wiggle room that if you want Florida in, you can get them in, and really the only people that would complain would be Alabama. But I also think if you wanted a case for Alabama, you could make that case as well. You could say, hey, these teams are so similarly situated, the best tiebreaker is the head-to-head, and Alabama's, what, 3-1? Is that right? 3-1 against Florida? And again, USC right there at 8. And it's so interesting. Like, again, if you remove USC from it, you say, well, under normal circumstances, Florida would be in. Well, you got Georgia sitting there at RPI 11. They're going to be in. And so it appears, based on how it sits today, and we may feel differently on Sunday, that it will be an SEC team that gets pushed out, which I think actually helps the committee too. So rather than them saying, hey, you've got an SEC bias, well, Georgia moves in. And of course, Georgia could still play their way into a top 10 RPI, but they're going to be in either way as a top eight. That it would be either Alabama or Florida getting bumped out, not an ACC team. And I think that's important. You know, and I can tell you, the people that I know on this committee, they want to get it right. They do. They want to get it right. They want to be good advocates for their conference. All right, so once we get from there, and again, I still think they let USC host at number 16. Number one, because of geography, but also two, the RPI is eight. We can't pretend that RPI doesn't matter because that's where it all starts. But as you dig a little bit deeper into this thing, again, the resume just simply falls apart for USC. So I think based on the strength of the RPI and the fact that there's not a lot of teams in the mid to high teens with strong resumes, I think you could get away with USC being 16 and geographically pairing them up with UCLA in a super. Now, that also ensures that you're going to have a Big Ten team go to Omaha, right? And if you don't think that matters, you're kind of kidding yourself a little bit. So that's a guarantee. If I'm selling this to the Big Ten rep, I'm like, listen, I know UCLA beat USC, and USC would love to prefer to play anybody but them, but they didn't schedule very well. But I can guarantee you, you're going to get a top 10. You're going to get a top 8, and you're going to get a super regional that ensures that your conference has representation in the College World Series. I think I could sell that easily. And then right just beyond this little kind of this little glut of team 7, 8, 9, there's Nebraska at 10. Now, I don't think – now, if Nebraska, who's 10 in the RPI, and, you know, Georgia's right there behind them, effectively, if you replace Georgia and USC, you're still 10 in the RPI. So I think they're out of the top eight, and eventually the Big Ten tournament itself will kind of flesh itself out. But I think Nebraska still holds as one of the stronger host sites, but not as a top eight. Then we get to A&M. That is now down to 12 in the RPI. And again, people say, well, you know, Steve, hey, they finished in the top four in the SEC. Guys, conference finish is not the first metric that we're going to look at, nor should we. You want to look at teams based on their own individual resumes. And based on the numbers that are in front of us right now, Texas A&M should not be a top eight. They shouldn't be. 12 in the RPI, and you're already kind of doing a favor for the SEC because you're going to put the conference champion in the top eight, even if they don't have a top eight RPI. I just don't think you can get another favor because it's not just the SEC sitting in that room. Right? Is the Big Ten going to be okay with, okay, well, yeah, well, we're number 10 at Nebraska, and A&M is 12. Well, if anybody should deserve to get in, it should be us at 10 and not Texas A&M. And you could also make the argument, too, that, hey, we got USC at number 8 in the RPI and UCLA at number 1, and we still managed to be the 10th finisher, and we got 40-plus wins. Unless something crazy happens, and again, we'll talk about this on Sunday. Like, if A&M wins the tournament, I think then you've got to revisit this. But short of them winning the Southeastern Conference tournament, I think they're out. And I think they may be out even if they win the conference tournament. And that's something to consider, too. Because, again, you know, we talk about having top eights. I mean, if you're the SEC, you already know you got Auburn and Texas, right? You know you got those. And then you feel like between Alabama and Florida, you'll get one of those, which gives you three. Well, then there's Georgia. So you're already expected to get four of the eight. Do you really think they're going to give us a fifth? I don't think so. And again, UCLA and Georgia Tech are locked in at 1 and 2. They're non-SEC teams. So basically you have one other spot that you can fill if you give the SEC five. Well, North Carolina's locked in. And then again, Florida State has Mike Alford on the committee. I just don't think Mike's going to stand for that. And so I think A&M is going to be angry, and they may even pout. They'll host, but I just don't see the path for them. There's just not enough games left, right? Because even if USC loses, are they going to fall all the way out? No. If UCLA loses, they're not going to fall all the way out, right? And so, again, there's a lot of talk and a lot of chatter that doesn't match the metrics. And, again, there's some people that think Southern Miss should be a top eight. And, again, the numbers don't support that. And, again, I commend Southern Miss for going out and scheduling so aggressively the non-conference. But they're 13 in the RPI. And when you look in their conference tournament, there's just no RPI climbing opportunities for them. And we knew this kind of going into the end of the regular season that they were, you know, basically their resume was built in the first month of the season. And yes, they are on a 10-game winning streak, and they should be because they haven't played a team with a winning record since then. They beat Georgia State in the tournament, and they're 27-30. So if they beat Troy, then that's the first winning team that they have defeated since they beat South Alabama back on April 26th. So it's nearly a month. And this is what happens, you know, when you play in one of these conferences. And that's just kind of the reality of how life works. So, again, no real RPI climbing opportunities for Southern Miss. So I think they can go ahead and recognize and accept the fact that they're going to be a solid host but not a top eight. Now, again, Ole Miss can't host. And, again, I expect Mississippi State to host. And I think, again, if you remove USC, who I think eventually will host, but I think they deserve to be seated behind Mississippi State, but I don't know what the committee is going to do, that would have State probably coming in as a 13 seed. And if it goes strictly by the RPI, then, yeah, that probably has us going to play Texas. But nevertheless, what happens behind us? Okay, so, again, Ole Miss is at 15 in the RPI. They're not going to pass State in the RPI. It's not going to happen. Okay, that's done. And they're also a 15-15 finisher in the SEC. And they're not going to give Mississippi three host sites. Okay, so anybody advocating for that to happen, don't listen to them anymore. 16 and 17, you've got Oregon and Oregon State right there together. Okay, so it makes perfect sense to send Oregon State to Oregon. Oregon State's got 43 wins. They also have four quad four losses. You need another extreme West Coast site? Yeah, well, you can accommodate Oregon and Oregon State at Oregon. And again, Oregon State can do nothing to improve their standing. They are at 17 in the RPI. They're not going to pass Mississippi State. They're not going to pass Southern Miss. It's not going to happen. West Virginia, who again is my pick to be the Big 12 host, they're at 18 now. In between them and Kansas is Wake Forest, again, but they're 5-14 against the Quad 1. It's not going to happen. You know, it's just not going to happen for Wake. But again, I believe Wake Forest and Kansas is still kind of an either-or thing. Now, let's get down to Arkansas. Way down at 23rd. So they are 9 spots behind Mississippi State in the RPI. Yes, they beat State head-to-head. Yes, they're a game better in the standings. All that's true. They also have a ton of quad four losses. I say a ton. Maybe that's not a fair characterization. They have 3 quad fours. So they have 2 quad threes. And 12 in the SOS. I think it's going to be difficult for Arkansas. Now, of course, they're going to play Texas. And what could simplify this for everybody, and again, what would be good for the Bulldog psyche if Texas just wins that game, and then our people don't have to worry about that. But it's a long way to go. It's a long way to go. And again, you can't negate the full expanses of a 3-month season in a week. You can't do it. There's just not enough math to work in your favor. And so again, Arkansas, 23rd in the RPI, it's going to be difficult. It is. And by that token, too, I mean, you know, like, you know, Cincinnati still alive in the Big 12 tournament. You know, nobody's advocating for those guys to host. It's just a lot of SEC people. And, of course, we all love Dave Van Horn. Well, most of us do. And Arkansas has been a tremendous program. But this is not a great Arkansas team. And I think, again, you know, 37-19 overall, and Mississippi State's 40-17. You know, and so for every metric that you can offer, you know, in favor of Arkansas, there's one that's against them and for Mississippi State, including the fact that, you know, State on the back half of the schedule, in quad three and quad four, no losses, completely clean and clear. It's true. So I think it would take something of gargantuan proportions for Arkansas. And I think the fact, too, that the blow has already been softened, most people are expecting them to be a 2 seed somewhere on the road. So again, let's just kind of run it back here. And again, I think USC deserves to host but not be a top 8. So if we just go strictly by RPI and what we know about college baseball, you're 16, again, UCLA, Georgia Tech, Auburn, Texas, North Carolina, Florida State, Alabama, and again, I got USC hosting, Florida host, Nebraska host, Georgia host, A&M host, Southern Miss host, Mississippi State host. So the top 14 teams in the RPI, we expect to host. Then Ole Miss won't host. Then Oregon or Oregon State, which we expect to be Oregon, right? And then you've got one spot left for a Big 12 team. So that's where it sits. Again, I think the top 14 are locked in, and I think there's still some fluctuation in the low teens about where everybody is seated. But from here, from where we sit right now, and there's so many teams now not in a position to improve their standing, we absolutely expect Mississippi State to host. Brian O'Connor said as much, but of course, you know, he didn't want to jinx it. So you get those 14, your 15 is Oregon, and then your 16 is either West Virginia or Kansas. That's how I see it today. We will reconvene on Sunday after the hosts are announced, and we'll break it all down. We may not even do a full show, but we'll break down kind of where we are, what we've seen, and then on Monday we come back and we break down the NCAA tournament field. And I'll do a little research, too, based on the results of the conference tournaments, because where they get a little creative at times is you know, the last at-larges. Because, you know, you got so many of these you know, automatic bids from, you know, from minor conferences. All right, they're going to go in and just kind of fit around geographically. But, you know, teams like Kentucky. And I think if Kentucky had beaten Vanderbilt, you could feel a whole lot better about being in. But they're still RPI at 36. So it's going to be interesting. You can get a little creative there. And you're just kind of looking at the seed line now, you know, with Kentucky. You know, Boston College is 35 in the RPI, just one spot ahead. But they're 17 and 13 in the ACC. They won five more games at Kentucky. They're 36 and 21. But the issue comes in, like, strength of schedule. They're 51, where Kentucky's 29. You know, Kentucky also has some quad three losses. You know, and so if Kentucky gets in, I'm happy. If they don't get in, I understand, right? But, of course, they could potentially be the last team in. But, yeah, I mean, it's you're not going to have, like, the Vanderbilt thing is just absurd. Like, I've seen some people out there just trying to advocate, oh, Vanderbilt's just better. Guys, Vandy is 72 in the RPI. They finished eight games above 500. They have four quad four losses, two in the quad three. There's no way that you're putting them in. And it's just like all the angst about, you know, LSU. And, LSU's 67 in the RPI. Well, we own sweeps over both of those teams, so we would love for them to have had better finishes in conference and to be able to compete for the opportunity to play in the NCAA tournament. That helps us in our RPI. But again, we've taken all this data, we've broken it down the best we can, and again, we don't know for sure, you know, what the committee is going to do. But I think it's pretty safe to say Mississippi State is not like the 16th host site. We're 14th. And so even in the event there is some surprise somewhere, Mississippi State should still safely be in the 16. So, and I wanted to break that down to kind of give you guys a little bit of understanding, you know, kind of how it all just broke down. And one of the things I think is interesting too is, again, this committee by and large is kind of is what they were last year. I mean, there's been very, very few exceptions and changes, you know, to this tournament committee. And it's kind of looking back at last year, and we've extensively talked about 2024, but we hadn't really looked at last year. Vanderbilt was the number one seed. They didn't win the Southeastern Conference. Texas did. And Texas was second. Arkansas was third, then Auburn. So we had four SEC top eights in the top four. Then there's North Carolina. Then there's LSU, then there's Georgia, then there's Oregon State. So six of the top eight were SEC schools. It makes a lot of sense. Florida State was 9, Ole Miss 10, Clemson 11, Oregon 12, Coastal 13, 14 is Tennessee, 15 was UCLA, then Southern Miss. So you had two G5 teams that hosted last year. I think there's a good chance you have one this year. And I think a lot of that, too, is because you haven't had, outside of Southern Miss, you really hadn't had a G5 team go out there and really kind of set the woods on fire. That's important to understand. And I think when you go back and, you know, you think about all of the at-large, like last year, at-larges, Alabama, Arkansas, right? They made it. Let's go a little deeper here. From the SEC, Florida wasn't at large. Georgia, of course, at large. Kentucky, LSU, yeah, Mississippi State, obviously. But, you get a little creative on the back end of this thing, and you kind of find out, you know, the SEC had 13 teams make tournament last year. 13. And which was a record. And, of course, the more we expand these conferences, that's what's going to happen. I don't think, you know, when you look at this year in the SEC standings, I don't think anybody feels like that we number one, are we going to get that many or do we deserve that many? But you start working through hosting spots and that kind of stuff, and, you know, the SEC is the best conference and nobody can really significantly tell you otherwise. I mean, we you prove it on the field, right? And that's the thing you look at and you begin to kind of wonder about is, you know, what are they going to emphasize? And again, you know, looking back at this 13 teams, right? The only way that happens this year is, it's impossible now. We could get as many as 12 because Vanderbilt's not going to make it. LSU's not going to make it. South Carolina, Missouri, not going to make it. Kentucky could be the 12th team And again, they're having to sweat this thing out, and they're hanging by a thread. They need the chalk to hold in these conference tournaments, so you don't have a one bid league turn into a two bid league because your conference champion got beat. But that's where we are. So we won't match last year's record. But again, there'll be a lot of teams, and again, there's 64 teams, and you can think about, you know, the SEC getting a dozen teams in there. You know, it gives you a good opportunity, and I still believe you could put us in different brackets and not pair us up in the super regional. We'd probably just have another SEC tournament for the most part in Omaha. But again, it's one of those things where you think you know, but you don't know for sure. And there are a lot of people out there, and I want you to forgive those people too. And I'll do my best to do the same. There's a lot of people out there. They want it so bad. They want state to host so bad. And we wanted all year long, and we felt that for probably the first 6 weeks of the season, that this was a super team capable of winning a national championship. That's how we felt. You remember, we played UCLA in Arlington. We believed if we won that game, we would be the number one team in America come Monday. And we would have been, but we didn't win. And that kind of set this trend in motion about state against top 10 quality teams. And so now a lot of people are thinking, you know what, this team is not going to be able to go win an AFL championship. This team probably couldn't win in Omaha. And you say, I just want to be a top eight. Well, then, you know, we lose that series to Auburn and lose to A&M. It kind of trickles away from us in the month of May. And so now people are, this is the one thing they're hanging on to. It's like, yeah, Steve, I bought in the beginning and I wanted to go to Omaha and I thought we'd be good enough to compete for an AFL championship. Well, that's gone. Now, we still have the possibility to do that, but that's no longer the expectation. And Steve, I wanted to be a top eight, and I thought it could give us the clearer path. We'd have postseason baseball at Duty Noble Field back-to-back weekends, provided we advanced. That's been removed from me. And so now it's like, dude, if we don't host, what has all this been about? Right? That's where the thinking comes from. It's like, dude, we didn't host last year. We didn't host in 24. We hadn't hosted since we won the national championship. I just want to host the regional because I feel like we can win a regional at home, right? Especially against a bunch of non-conference teams, right? And so that's where that angst comes from, is, you know, the loss of expectations. And for many of you, like me, you thought this team is a lock to host. And now all of a sudden you're sweating it out a little bit. And you're like, dude, this absolutely cannot happen. Well, hopefully, after listening to today's show, you can take a bit of a breath, right? Because it does not appear that we are precariously positioned. The metrics favor us to be a host. Simple as that. I'm making no guarantees, but it will be a complete surprise to me if we're not a host when they announce those 16 regional sites on Sunday. And shortly after they do, we'll take to the air, probably give you an hour or so, just kind of break it all down. And then we'll come back on Monday and break down the tournament as we talked about earlier. But I appreciate all of you. And I thank you so much for your support of the website, the show, the spa, and everything that we've got, every pot that we have a spoon in. You guys have been very supportive of me and my family. And I want to thank you for that. From the bottom of my heart, thank you. And I meet so many of you and you're like, Steve, thanks for all you do. And I appreciate that more than you can know. You know, it's the truth. You are the people that I care about. And so when I take to the airwaves, I'm number one, I'm commiserating with you when we lose. I'm celebrating with you when we win. And when we get to points like this in a season, I'm doing the best that I can to explain where things sit based on what I know, what I hear, and what I've learned in three decades doing this. So I want you to relax a little bit. Enjoy some college baseball. Maybe do some scoreboard watching. Root for Texas. Okay, just because I think it'll make a lot of people feel better, right? Because then you don't have to worry about, hey, well, what if Arkansas rallies in here late? Because, yes, there are some metrics that favor them. But they're just not right now in a position where they have elevated themselves enough to be compared head-to-head with state. So we just got to do our part. Let's thank all of you that have floated at True Rest Floats by Stargill. I encourage you, if you hadn't done so, book an appointment today. Come see what all the fuss is about. Your neighbors have, and chances are they're sleeping better than you. True Rest Floats by Stargill is part of the True Rest Network. And yes, it is a mom and pop operation, but it's 99% mom. It's Dana's business. And I go up there and help from time to time, but she's the driving force behind the whole thing. She deserves all the credit. She does. She's a great hostess too. She'll make sure that you have a great experience. Dial 662-268-7601 to speak directly to her to get more information and to schedule your appointment. Be sure and check it out today. And visit DutyNobleBook.com. You get signed copies of all my sports titles, including Flim Flam, Stark Villains, Alpha Dogs, Dogpile, The Dude, and of course the personal memoir, When the Bottom Falls. And come join us over at JeansPage.com. That's where you can get your questions answered a little more efficiently, I guess. We can have an ongoing dialogue there. Don't always do that so much on social media, but we're happy to do that for you over at Gene's Page, the longest running Mississippi State media company that the world has ever seen. And we're going to be around for several more years, and we look forward to that, provided my health holds out, right? And but again, I love each and every one of you, and I hope that you have had a great week. And the next time we speak, we'll know exactly what postseason baseball is going to look like for Mississippi State. And again, final comment, yes, I absolutely expect to host. I will be shocked if we don't, but no matter what happens, we know we're going to be in an NCAA tournament, and we're going to be ready to go. But man, we deserve to host at Duty Noble Field. This fan base has endured a lot the last several years. We need something to celebrate and feel good about, and I know that you guys will pack it out, and you deserve that. You do. And these players and coaches, they deserve that as well. But I think this fan base, again, you know, it has been such a tumultuous few years in all sports. We need something to really feel good about, and my earnest and honest belief is that we're going to have that next weekend as we host an NCAA regional in Starkville, Mississippi. But until next time, let's all live our lives in a way we make more friends than enemies, and people can see a difference in the way we live.